Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
All right. Well, so good to be with you this afternoon. And I get the 2:30 slot, which is normally the slot where it's after lunch and everybody's kind of like, so just kind of ease in. If you fall asleep, I will not call you out, okay? Well, we're just family in here, but the 2:30 slot's a tough one. And so hopefully if you need coffee, I have it up here. You can drink some of it. I want to tell you, I want to tell a little bit about my story because it will help you to understand as I get into the whole idea of being a sending church, because it's taken us a while to not only get to that place, but it took a while to get to that place. So I remember the very first conversation that my wife and I had about church planting. She had come from a family where her dad had planted a church. It didn't go very well. My dad planted a church, two churches actually. One I was part of in South Florida that failed my freshman year of college. The second one was 2 years later in Michigan, which I had a little hand in. And that actually worked, but it was very, very, very difficult. It was probably a lesson in how not to plant churches on both sides. And so my wife and I we had been married for about 4 years. I had been in student ministry, total about 9 years before I planted Westridge. But 1995, we were up really late wrestling with God. She and I were both going through experiencing God. I don't know if you've ever been through that, Henry Blackaby, but somewhere in the middle of that workbook, almost everybody I talk to, you get totally jacked up and you stop and you go, whoa, my world just got messed up. Well, that's what happened to us. And we eventually finished it, but we were up late talking, and she said, what do you want to do? I mean, if you could pick anything to do in this whole world, you know, what would you want to do? And I said, what do you think about starting a church? And she said, you mean like no people, no money, no building, like just moving from here? And I said, yeah, doesn't that sound exciting to you? And she said, just the thought of that turns my stomach. And then she said it in the next breath. She said, but Brian, I'm game. Whatever God has for us, I'm game. But that one is really a tough one. And so I actually kind of put that on the back burner a bit. And eventually, about 5 or 6 months later, met with my senior pastor. I worked at the time for Jerry Falwell, and people always tell me, let people get to know you a little bit before you tell them that. Because when you tell people you work for Jerry Falwell, it's either pucker or duck. And so here we are on the West Coast. I have no idea what you... If you leave, I know why, okay? So, but anyways, he was such a great visionary and was a church planner. And I think all in all, has planted over 5,000 churches in his lifetime, which was quite amazing. However, we met with him, and I just said, Doc, I said, I have no idea what God's doing in our marriage, in our hearts. Amy was sitting next to me, but I know that we've been called to leave Thomas Road in Lynchburg, and we've been called to lead student ministry. And he said, well, why don't you go pick a major city and go start a contemporary church, somewhere where there's a lot of unreached people. And so we chose Atlanta, Georgia, because there's so many unreached people in Atlanta, Georgia. I mean, it's like when you think of unreached people groups, you think Atlanta, right? Atlanta would have been like, if there was a list of 100 places to move to, Atlanta might have been like 99. But God clearly took us there, brought us there, and I'll share at the very end of how we got there. But believe it or not, the county that we live in at the time in 97 was 93.7% unchurched, which I could not believe. I got those statistics from NAM, and we surveyed about 2,000 homes, knocked on doors, and came out to be almost that exact same amount. It didn't mean those people were lost and on their way to hell, but it did mean that they weren't in church for a reason. And so we ended up planting Westridge in 1997. Now, I got to be honest with you. When I started Westridge, I had no intention of starting another church. I had no intention of our church being a church planting church. My goal in 97, which I think was a goal of most guys like me, was to go into an area and reach as many people in one region as possible. And, you know, at the time, if you think about what was going on in 97, you had Rick Warren at Saddleback, you had Bill Hybels at Willow Creek, and people were traveling, and still do, to see these massive campuses kind of like this. And so that was, and quite honestly, that's my background. That's all I knew to do, really. And so that was my goal. And we're going to reach as many people. We're going to saturate Northwest Atlanta with the gospel and build as many buildings as we can and offer as many programs as we possibly can. And you have to know a little something about Dallas, Georgia. Dallas, Georgia is, when you think of Dallas, Texas, think of the opposite. That's Dallas, Georgia. I mean, we have low attendance days on, and this is true. NASCAR, when the Atlanta Motor Speedway comes, our attendance is low. When Georgia Tech plays Georgia, our attendance is low the next morning because people have hangover. I'm not exaggerating. So college football, NASCAR, and we just came through last Sunday, which was probably our lowest attended Sunday of the whole year, the first weekend of, anybody want to guess? Hunting season. So truly, I'm not kidding you, it impacts us in a huge way. So the idea of planting other churches out of our church is like, what? We're going to do what? This is a totally foreign concept. But something happened. We started Westridge in September 1997, and something happened in February 98. We had a group come through from Lynchburg called World Help, and they had just come back from India, and they were talking about planting churches all over India. And, you know, that was kind of cool, planting churches all, you know, in India. And I remember the director of World Help got up at the very end, and he said, for X amount of dollars, you can plant a church in India. You can put Bibles in every chair of this church. Here's how much it will cost. And there's a lady sitting next to me while we were listening to this. My wife, who ran the preschool the first year and a half of our church, was down the hall. And this lady said, I'm going to go get your wife. And I went, okay, I didn't think anything of it. Next thing, my wife's sitting next to me. And she's listening to this whole spiel. And she leans over to me and she says, Brian, we need to plant a church in India. And I said, what are you talking about, Amy? I said, we just started this church. We hardly have any money to pay payroll. And she goes, someone just gave us a large gift. We need to plant a church tonight. And I said, yes, ma'am. And so I went and grabbed a couple of my leaders at the time, and I said, we're going to plant a church, take an offering, and they went, let's do it. So I stood up in front of our church. We took up a love offering. And I'm not kidding you, we came within pennies of the exact amount of what was required to not only build a building, but to put a Bible in every chair of this new church plant in India. I have a picture of this church on my wall in my office. The reason I'm telling you this story is something happened in our church after that. It changed the mindset of the people that came to our church, that God could do something, that we could come up with that kind of money, almost to the penny, and that God would let us build a building in India. People in our area had never seen anything like that. Next Sunday, we had the largest attendance we'd ever had, the biggest offering we were, and I'm going, I think God's into this. There's something about this sending mentality, multiplying mentality, where God is actually blessing that. And so we did that. Now, not only did God begin to bless us numerically and financially, but he began to do a work in my heart. And it was about building a church that not only reached its own community, but being a church that would reach other communities, not just overseas, but in our own community as well. And I didn't know what it was going to look like. I had no idea it was going to be the wild ride that I've been on for really the last 19 years, but I did know that it was going to stretch me and it was going to challenge me. But during that time, God was impressing something very strong on my heart, and this was what it was. If God is going to put another big box in Northwest Atlanta and give it rapid growth, it can't be about just one church. I just could not get away from that thought. If God was going to put another church in Northwest Atlanta and let us grow quickly and give us financial resources, it was not going to be about just one church. And I remember the day, you know, back in the day there, you know, 2000, and I guess it still is, 2000 is the magic number in a lot of denominations. When you hit that number, it's like you have arrived. It's mega church status. And I remember we hit that number in 2002. It was 5 years in. We took our staff out to Longhorns. We celebrated. And I remember sitting there in Longhorns, my staff was excited, we were all exhausted, worn out, and feeling very anticlimactic, going, this is not what I thought it was going to feel like. This is a matter of fact, it's kind of an empty feeling. It was exciting, I was thankful, but there was an emptiness in it as well. And so at that point, I started thinking, you know what, I'm going to really dip our toe into church planting a little bit. We started investing some money into some friends who were starting churches in places like Rochester, New York, Charlotte, North Carolina. Matter of fact, if you were in this last session with Sean Lovejoy, he was actually the first church planter that we invested in. And we jumped into the SBC winter. They were sponsoring something out in Salt Lake with the Winter Olympics, and we thought, okay, well, we'll get involved in that. So we actually helped plant a church outside of Salt Lake, which is still going. And so here we are, we're sending finances, but now we're doing something a little different. We're actually sending teams out of people, and they're getting into it like, they're excited about these church plants. And next thing I know, I've got people moving to Salt Lake. And I'm going, this is bizarre. that people would leave Atlanta and move to Salt Lake, and college students enrolling at, you know, colleges in Utah to help these church plants. And I'm still struggling with the whole idea of planting other churches and now sending out people to help them. And in the summer of 2002, God did something crazy in my life. I was 5 years into the church. We just, as I said, we had just hit 2000. I was this close to burnout stage. And I was looking for a conference to go to. And in early 2000s, there were not conferences every weekend like or weeks like there are now. The only conference I could find in 2002, in July, was the Saddleback Worship Pastors Conference. And I'm going, oh my goodness, the thought of 3,000 worship pastors and me just for four or five days. And so I thought, but I got to get out of here. And so I had got on a plane, came out here by myself, and I'm not kidding. I'm walking around Saddleback, and it was like everywhere I turned, a concert was breaking out. People with guitars, it was like, this is my worst nightmare. And but the last day of the conference, Rick Warren spoke in the morning. He was introducing this book called Purpose Driven Life, which hadn't come out yet. And Max Lucado was speaking about on a book that he was eventually going to write called Not About Me. And I was wanting to, I really wanted to go to the Pacific Ocean, to be honest with you. So I was going to skip the last day, and I thought, no, I'm going to go listen to this. Yeah. So I go, I listen to Rick's, you know, rolling out the Purpose Driven Life. I'm getting ready to leave again, and I thought, no, I'll just listen to Max Lucado. And I remember Max Lucado getting up, and he said something like this. He said, I feel like I'm going to contradict what the host speaker just said, and then he actually didn't. It was really a neat marriage of how it rolled together. But he said, I was talking to this mentor of mine who was on his deathbed in his 80s, and I asked him a question. I said, if you could tell me the greatest spiritual lesson you've ever learned in your whole life, here you are coming to the end of your life, what is it? And he said, Max, he said, I've actually thought a lot about this. He said, I'm going to tell you what it is. He said, here it is. It's not about me, it's not about you, and it's not about now. And then he said this, God does not exist to make much of us, we exist to make much of him. And I'm writing this down, and then Max Lucado, just in the only way that he can do, just rolled out just this amazing lesson on Moses and the burning bush, and it's not about me, and as you know, he wrote a book on that. But I went to the Pacific Ocean after that meeting. I had a little time between there and my plane flight. I grabbed my journal, grabbed a coffee, sat on a park bench in Laguna Beach, tears running down my face. I rewrote the mission statement of my life, and I can't quote it to you word for word at this moment, but it talks about God's glory and his kingdom. That's it. My life from this point on was going to be all about bringing glory to God by expanding his kingdom. Well, that's it. I just said it to you. And so I went back and I told my church, I told my staff, I said, I have no idea what this is going to look like, but I'm going to tell you, it's going to change everything that we're about as a church. It's going to change the way we do church. It's going to change the way we budget, the way we, and, but God had to break my heart first. And then in 2003, I met two guys who, just knowing them and being, befriending them really changed my whole idea. And I began to understand what the actual kingdom meant, the kingdom concept. One of them was a guy named Bob Roberts, who some of you may have heard here at Exponential, or may read one of his books, or, you know, followed him somewhere on Twitter or whatever. The other one just walked in the door, Jeff Christofferson, who I remember Jeff and I were at this same little conference called GlocalNet, and Jeff got up and did a talk called Kingdom Matrix. And I remember walking up to Jeff going, I've never heard anything like that before. You need to write a book on that. And he did. I don't take credit for that, Jeff, but I think a lot of people were saying, you have to put this in print. And here's how Jeff basically totally summed up the kingdom. He said, it is God's active and sovereign reign through history, bringing about his purpose in the world through Jesus Christ. Is that right, Jeff? Simply put, that's word for word. Simply put, the kingdom of God is what the world looks like when Jesus gets his way. And through those few years, I decided this was no longer going to be about me. It's no longer going to be about a big church. Jesus was going to get his way in whatever it is we were about to do. So 2003, we started this internship program where we brought in a full-time staff member on board. We thought, let's just have some interns. Let's get some residents going. I mean, just we brought in one. That's all we could afford. The church had just celebrated its 10th year anniversary. And something cool happened along the way. God sent this guy into our church who worked for, at the time, the Georgia Baptist Convention. And he had been a church planner. And he eventually became an elder at Westridge, and he would not leave me alone about planning a church. It was like every time I would see him, he would go, listen, if we don't do it now, it's not going to happen. If we don't do it now, it's not going to happen. If we don't get into this further, I'm like, this guy's wearing me out. I'm already into it. and not realizing that God was wanting us to even take further steps. Well, 2005, we started a church planting school, and we wanted to bring guys on our campus for 1 year, help them, raise funds to help them, send them out. We had 14 guys enroll in that first class. I was blown away by that. Once they got into it, they realized that not everybody in the room was a church planter. And next thing I know, they all partnered up with each other, and we sent four teams out. And currently those four churches are running over 3,000 people weekly. And the crazy thing that happened was, is all of a sudden, 400 people from our church went out with them to help them plant these churches, which was all around, at that time, the state of Georgia. 2006, we started a goal. We had a goal of planting 25 churches in the 25 metro counties around Atlanta. We just began to dream about what this could look like if God really turned us into a multiplying church, a church that reproduced and sent our people out. And then, as some of you may know, in 2010, as Shane mentioned a moment ago, a guy named Mac Lake and I started a network called Launch, which was all about assessing, training, and coaching church planters from all over, in cities all over America. And in from that time frame, from 2010 to 2015, we helped start over 100 churches. Now, some of you know that Launch is now called Multiply, and it's housed here, actually in Alpharetta, Georgia, under the NAM headquarters. And it's what they're using now in the suburbs to train and assess and coach church planters in the Sin Cities. Now, here's what I've told you. Here's why I've told you all this, okay? I've told you all this to tell you that I know exactly what it feels like to sit in the chair where you're sitting. I know what it feels like to be a church planter, being at a conference like this, at some point being overwhelmed. Sometimes conferences like this, when I was early in my day, I would walk away feeling discouraged, like I'm never going to get to that point where I'm speaking like an Irwin McManus or a whoever. But at the same time, I remember also wondering how in the world are we ever going to plant other churches? How are we going to afford to send people out? How are we going to create a sending church culture when our needs here at Westridge are so great? And so if you're sitting here this afternoon, here's what I've learned about these groups. It's not my job to convince you to do this. I think you're already convinced that it's the right thing to do. What I want to try to do is to help you to understand how it happens. And just explain a little bit about how it happened for us, which I've done. But just to give you five or six things that really can help you create a sending culture in your church. And the first one is going to sound very simple, but it's very important, and I know you know this, is just prayer. I remember Dr. Falwell, Jerry Falwell, saying this over and over as I was a student at Liberty and then being on staff with him. He would say, nothing of eternal significance happens apart from prayer. And I will tell you that my whole journey to become a church planter was birthed out of prayer, because God had to do a work in my heart, before he was ever going to reveal to us exactly what God was calling us to do. And changing the heart of a congregation has to be focused on what is on the heart of God. And the way we know that is the work of the Holy Spirit. So I knew before that we were ever going to become a sending church, here's what I had to do. I had to ask God that he would, first of all, do a work in me, which he did. Then I had to ask him, would you do a work in my staff? Because we started this church with one mindset, one kind of thought process, and now I'm asking them to do something totally different. Then I had to say, would you do a work in our leadership team? Would you allow them to see this vision, that break their heart the same way you broke my heart? And then would you do a work in our church? Because this is going to be tough. Now, the great thing is, even though I knew it would be hard work, I knew that I was praying in line with God's will. And when you're praying in line with God's will, you set yourself up to see prayers answered in a powerful way. And I saw that firsthand. And so just, through my private prayer time, praying with my staff, praying with my elders, some of you may be deacons, but getting others to pray along with you, none of this is going to happen unless it begins with prayer. Becoming a sending church, becoming a church that truly, here at Exponential, they talk about going from level five, maybe level 2 to 3 or 3 to 4. Five is really, that's tough. I'm still trying to get my mind around 5. But, just going from here to there is challenging, but all of it has to be birthed in prayer if you're going to see God move people's hearts to really grab hold of this. The second thing is to lead. And as a leader, I knew that I was going to have to lead strong through this initiative, all right? Because there were some questions that I was going to get early on. And matter of fact, I still get the same questions. Why would we send out good people who give good money, who are good workers to help start other churches when we could use their money and those people here at Westridge Church? Why would we ever do that? Why would we invest literally hundreds of thousands of dollars into other churches or whatever, church planting networks, when every other area of our church needs budget money, when they need staffing? Why would we do something like that? And here's where I had to lead strong. And here's where, if you're ever going to tackle this and grab hold of this for your church, here's where you're going to have to really lead strong. I had to lead our church to understand the theology of God's kingdom, the theology of multiplication, and the theology of the Great Commission. Because even though I hired a staff member to oversee some of this stuff, leading our church to understand this and to grab hold of it and to actually embrace it was not something I could delegate to another staff member. Okay? Because if you're a senior pastor in here and this is where you believe God is leading you, and I hope it is, you have to own this. This is not another program in your church. This is who you are. This is who you are as a pastor. This is for you guys who have just started your church. This is how you're starting your church. This is what you're talking about right now. You know, if I could do this all over again, this is where I would have been in 1997. And so changing culture is extremely difficult, but you have to lead through that. And again, when you're praying God's will, He's going to answer in powerful ways. And you have to put this into the DNA of your church. The third thing is to communicate. You have to preach on the kingdom of God. You have to preach on multiplication. You have to preach on church planting. You have to cast a compelling vision for why this needs to happen right now. And one of the ways you do that is you're always armed with statistics. Anytime somebody comes up to me at Westridge and wants to know why are we sending out thousands of dollars of church plants, I'm always armed with statistics. Not just for Northwest Atlanta, where I am in Dallas, Georgia, Paulding County, but also for the state of Georgia, for our country, for the cities that we work in. We work with NAM in the city of Boston. I know the statistics of Boston. To be able to say, here's why we're working in Boston, and here's the history of Boston. And the two great revivals came through Boston, and we're praying for a third one to come through Boston. So constantly having to do that. And my in-laws, who are both in their 70s, they are great examples of why that's important. Because I get these questions from them. Why are you doing this? And when I start rolling out statistics, they're like, I get it. All right. Also, you got to communicate the lostness of your own community. And I tell our people all the time, listen, we're going to plant churches 5 miles up the road. We're going to plant churches maybe even across the street if God leads us to do that. Here's why. Here's the stats. Here's the facts. But we're going to own the lostness of our community. Now, right now in 2016, Paulding County, where our church is 80% unchurched. We could not build a building big enough to reach all of the people who are out, who are not in church. And there's 200,000 people within a 20-mile radius. So these are stats and facts, and I talk about even how many churches we would have to plant and how many seats those churches would have to actually accomplish that goal. And it's overwhelming. But people get that when you start talking about, if we're going to own the lostness of our community, here's what it's going to have to look like. And we're going to have to think differently than we've ever thought before. And one of the things that we've been able to do just in the area of communication is to just show videos all the time. Show videos of our church planters that we've invested in. Have them, you know, send videos of thanking Westridge Church for investing in them, talking about, you know, hey, because you invested in us, we want to show you what God's doing in Baltimore, in Boston, or in Orlando, in Marietta, in Smyrna, Georgia, which is like maybe 20 minutes from us. A few times in our church's history since we really got involved in this, I've also had meetings with key influencers in our church. A couple different times I've had meetings with 100, 200 people sitting in a room just to say, I want to dive deeper into this conversation with you because I know that you have some questions. You're not only key influencers, but some of you are, you're the best givers in our church. I don't know exactly what you give, but someone does, and they told me to invite you. And so you're here. Let's talk about this. What are the questions that you want to ask me that you're afraid to ask about what we're doing and when it comes to being a sending church, multiplying? And I let them ask me the tough questions that they may not want to ask. And we answer it, and we go through it, you know, again, the theology of multiplication and the Great Commission. And it's just amazing what people, when you give that kind of attention and time and kind of the one-on-one or maybe one on 200, they go, okay, I get it. I get it. I didn't get it before, you know, sitting in a larger crowd, but I get it now. Maybe for you that's 20 people. Maybe it's 10 people. I don't know. For me early on, it was my elders, which was about five. It was my staff, which was about five or six. It was key influencers, which was about 20. You know, that some obviously it grows as your church grows, but you have to keep doing that. And then number four, you invest. You invest. You begin to invest in church planting in your own region. You start giving money to a church planter. All right? They just take these baby steps. Here's this guy that I know. Here's this church planter I know. All right? I'm going to tell you, here's Kyle Parrish over here, Kelly Parrish over here. He and his wife just planted in Colorado, northern Colorado. Went through launch assessment, multiply. Two great people. Some of you are going, I don't even know a church planter to invest in. Now you do. There they are right there. All right? They're from Colorado. They could use great investment. Get to know them afterwards. They're doing a great job. Reach in their area in northern Colorado. Our first local planter was in Cumming, Georgia, and you just met him a few moments ago if you were in here. His name's Sean Lovejoy. And I remember sitting with Sean. At Longhorns in 1999. They hadn't even launched a church yet. And he was coming to Little Vaughn Elementary School where our church met. And my wife and I were sitting across the table with he and Tricia, and they were coming to our services. And I remember right shortly after Sean launched, we had a funny conversation. He calls me. It was a Super Bowl. He calls me, and we were just talking about it. He calls me on the phone. He goes, Brian, he goes, I don't know what to do. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, well, I just had this Super Bowl party. And he said, and two of our small groups came, and they brought kegs. And I said, Sean, you're going to have to let it roll, bro. I mean, you know, I said, you know what? You start a church to reach unchurched people. It's what's going to happen. He's like, I never forget. He goes, I'm not in Alabama anymore, am I? I know you're in Cumming, Georgia. It isn't too far, we just begin to invest in churches like that. And you have these crazy, fun conversations. And can I say something? It's messy because you have conversations like that. And we've had some failures along the way as well. We've had a couple too high-profile failures, both moral situations. It just devastated us. But we just kept pushing through it, and God redeemed both those churches with great new pastors, and they're doing well. But here's the other thing you do. You invest people to join those church planters that you're investing in. I'll never forget the first time that we brought one of our church planters up on stage. Whenever we have a guy go through assessment, and then we do the training, and the guy comes out of Westridge, we bring him up on stage. And we let that guy, we call it fishing our pond. And I tell them, build a small group in our church. Build a small group with the idea that they're going to leave the church with you. And I tell people in our membership class, you're here, I want you to know that, but we're gonna invite you to leave at some point. All right? We may not invite you to leave and be a church planter, but we're gonna invite you to be on mission. So you need to know that. Somewhere in this community, you're going to be on mission. For some of you, it's going to be moving to another place. And I remember a guy named Danny Eccles who planted a church in Rockmart, Georgia. Danny's did a great job. He was an intern for us. And whenever we had Danny and his wife come up on stage, his wife Gracie, and he brought it was like 45, 50 people that he had fished out of our pond. And they're all on stage, and I had no idea who they were. But I looked up on stage, and I'm just looking at them walking up, and I'm going, okay, I know this family, this family, this family. And the largest giver in our church is standing behind me. You say, how do you know that? Well, he owns the largest GMC chain in the country, and it's in several states. And I knew that when he gave, it impacted our offerings quite a bit. I mean, in a big, big way. And number two giver wasn't even close. And I remember looking at him and going, oh, gosh, Danny, what the heck, man? And then God took me back to Laguna Beach, sitting on a park bench with my journal, rewriting the mission statement of my life and going, you serious about this? Is it really about my glory? Is it about my kingdom? Because I'm about to take the largest giver out of your church. Do you trust me with this? And I remember calling Danny later and going, Danny, you've got a great resource in your church. I just want you to know, I don't know if you know Mike and what he gives and how he wants to invest. I said, and then Danny calls me like 2 weeks later and goes, you're not going to believe what Mike just dropped in our offering plate. And I'm sitting there going, your glory, God, your kingdom. Because I'm like, we could use that. But you know what? It's just, I'm going to tell you something. You become about God's glory. You become about his kingdom. It will not get you on Outreach Magazine's 100 fastest growing list. I had a little funny, awkward moment with Ed Stetzer yesterday during a session, not realizing that Ed was the one that kind of launched that. But all that to say, this isn't going to get you there. But it may get you on someone else's list. And one day, hopefully, you'll get a chance to see the big picture of how God's used you, and won't be here on this earth. But I'm going to tell you something. It is, I wouldn't go back at all. Wouldn't go back at all. So you send teams. You send teams to help, even with our local churches, you send teams to help them with special events, outreach initiatives. You begin to invest in them. I'm going to just tell you this. I mean, we're here with the Send Network with NAM. Begin to invest in a large city somewhere that captures your heart. For us, it's Boston. We had been investing in Baltimore. We still do. God captured my heart with Boston a few years ago, and getting a chance now to work with church planters in Boston. And people at Westridge in the South, they're like, why are we investing in those Yankees? And we start going through the spiritual history of our country and talking how God has worked in our country in the past and how we're praying that he's going to work that same way through one of the most unchurched cities in the United States that influences the world because of their colleges. And it grabs people's hearts when you can share stats and vision and stories. And then you just talk about what's happening in their lives and your church planters on a constant basis. One of the things that we just started doing was every small group at Westridge now has a church planter that they are investing in. Every small group has adopted a church planter. So even some of our launch guys that we're not always still connected with, we're constantly running into them. Like I just ran into the parishes here today. And so I want to get a small group from Westridge connected with them because we want to take care of them on the backside. Now, I want to tell you this. One of the things that I'm so excited about is NAM is doing a better job than ever, not only assessing, training, and coaching church planters, but the best job that I can remember, and I was a NAM church planter in 97, of actually taking care of their church planters. Because every time I go speak for them somewhere, they're always walking out with love and swag, and the wives are walking out with gifts, and Shane just gave away some swag in this room. And I love the fact that they're taking care of their church planters like better than any other network that I know of. And I know those other guys. I love what NAM's doing on the backside of that. But we want to do that at our church, and you want to do that as well. When you send a guy out, you want to know their birthdays, his wife's birthday. I know Sean talked about this probably in the last session. Their kids' birthdays, their anniversaries. And you want to send them gift cards and just love on them so that they're always coming back to you going, that's our home church. I have a deep conviction that every pastor needs a pastor. Every church planter needs a pastor that they can pick up the phone, they have their number, and they say, I can call this guy at any time. When I started in 97, I had two. I could call Jerry Falwell. I could call Johnny Hunt, who was our sending church, and say, Pastor, can you help me right now? And that's important. But also, another thing that you can do is you can help other churches that you know to partner with your church planter. Let me give you an example of this. And Shane, you're going to have to help me with time here if I run. Okay. All right. So we have a planter that came through our assessment several years ago, training. They planted a church in downtown Atlanta on the campus of the five largest African-American campuses in the country together. So you got Spelman, Morehouse, Clark. I mean, they're all right there. There's 10,000 students right there, and they planted a church right there. Front door is all these colleges. The backside of their church, which is Vine City, is the toughest part of Atlanta, downtown Atlanta. And so when we adopted them and they came through and we said, we're going to be your sending church, we knew that this was going to be a lifetime commitment. I also knew that I'm going to have to figure out a way to help them. So I started talking to some of my other friends, even outside of our denomination, and saying, hey, would you meet with Damien and Zaret Boyd? Would you just meet and hear their story about how they want to reach these college campuses? How they want to reach the toughest neighborhood in Atlanta. Last year, one of my friends, a guy named Rob McDowell, not a Southern Baptist church. I just think they're non-denominational. Rob called me on the phone. He said, I just want to tell you what we're getting ready to do. I met with Damien, and we're going to give this week's offering to Damien and Zaret. I said, what are you talking about, like 10% of it? No, we're going to give the whole offering. And this is a fairly large church. Rob calls me on Monday. He's in tears. He says, listen, I just want you to know, we actually just took up one of the largest offerings in the history of our church. So I'm having a gut check moment because I'm about to cut Damien a check for $235,000. Now, this is a guy, honestly, this is a church, honestly, that covers their budget for the next 5 years. But that's what God does. When you line your church up with his will, you get to tell cool stories like that. And I have goosebumps telling you that. And Damien, I mean, he calls me on the phone. Bro, you're not going to believe what just happened. I'm like, I know what just happened. But I got a chance to stand up at Westridge that Sunday and say, I want to just tell you what just happened. Hats off to North Metro. who's 10 miles up the road for us, or partnering with us on a kingdom endeavor, all right? Listen, you don't need a staff member. You don't need a large church with a large budget to pull this off. You just need a heart for the kingdom. That's all you need. You just need a heart for the kingdom, and God will take you places you never thought you'd be. You will find up, I never thought I'd be standing here talking to you at Mariners Church about this issue 15 years ago. But what a ride. Because just God broke my heart however many years ago. And you just find yourself in cool places going, I don't know how I got here. But it's just going to continue to be about His glory and His kingdom. And then care, I'm going to just say this real quick. When I was growing up, I remember my church in Wayne, Michigan did such a phenomenal job of caring for foreign missionaries. And church planters need that same kind of care I mentioned a moment ago. Part of our job is looking at all of our church planters. Now what we're doing is just putting our arm around all of our church planters and going, hey, we're going to walk through life with you. Because my wife and I just turned 51. She's 49. And I'm looking at all of our church planters going, you know what, we're going to invest the rest of our lives into helping them finish well. And not just finishing well, but finishing strong. It's been amazing. The churches that we've actually had our hand on starting, take away launch, is about 80 or so, and there's been some failures along the way, and there's been some guys that have shut down. But we've just put our arms around these churches and said, we're going to invest in you, in your marriage, in your kids. And God's grown that. It's been kind of crazy how that's taken off as well. But again, I believe every church planter needs a pastor. Every church planter needs a home church. And part of what we're doing as well is monthly coaching. And I had a pastor ask me at one of the things I spoke at, it was the last thing I spoke at for you, Shane, at NAMM. He raised his hand and he goes, like, is this going to go on my calendar? If I plan a church, is this going to be something more I add to my calendar? You know, and I said, yeah, because you're going to need to coach this guy and you're going to need to walk with him. But I promise you it'll be one of the best things that's on your calendar and you'll look forward to it every month. One of the things that I love about this, and one of the reasons I keep doing it, and I'm just going to be honest with you, is when I hang around with church planters, they inspire me, they challenge me, and it takes me back to 19 years ago, because I was just hanging out with one of our Boston guys, Chris Causey, and a guy named Kyle, who's planting a church in Jackson, Mississippi, and I'm sitting here going, Lord, thanks for this little half hour I had with them, because my faith has been stretched, because when you're 19 years into it, you need your faith to continue to be stretched, to realize I still want to be as desperate for God as I was when I planted this church 19 years ago. And when I get a chance to be around Kyle and his wife, and I just know they are desperate. They're out with God. They're on the ledge. Because if God doesn't show up, they're going down. I want to live there. And so that's why I keep hanging out with church planters. Quite honestly, it's a little bit selfish. They continue to inspire me. And then the last word, celebrate. Whenever we have a church planter get ready to leave, we commission them. And bring them up on stage. I've lost our two top givers now in doing this. But twice a year I cast vision for church planting in our church. Talk about the kingdom. I share with our church the impact that church planting, our efforts in church planting are making around the country, around the world, so they can constantly understand what it is that they're investing in and how it's making a difference. Last year, we had four of our church planters come in and speak. I gave up the pulpit for four Sundays in a row. That's not hard to do, honestly. You may struggle with that, but to have our church planters from different parts of the country come in and speak four Sundays in a row just catapulted our efforts like crazy, because they're like, we get a chance to hear them, you know, see them, and now we get a chance to hear them preach as well. Plus, it gives such great experience to our guys. Let me end with this story, and then I'll take time for questions. When we were praying about where to start a church, here's where we had landed. After walking out of this meeting with Dr. Falwell. And I remember Dr. Falwell saying to my wife and I, just go pick a major city that's growing quickly, there's a lot of unreached people, and go. Actually, what you're doing in student ministry, just do it for adults. That's what he told me. And we're walking back to my car, and this is a couple months after the first conversation I had with my wife where she's ready to throw up. And I said, Amy, what do you think about what he just said in there? She goes, church planting. Doesn't that sound exciting to you? And I'm getting ready to throw up on the grass now because I'm realizing we're going to do this. We went back home, got out a map of the United States. We were going to go to either Charlotte. I'm from Detroit. My wife's from Charlotte. Philly, where I went to seminary. Tampa. I just thought it'd be cool to live near the ocean. Or Phoenix. I don't remember why. And next thing we know, we end up in Atlanta. And I'll tell you how that happened. We were sitting across from this guy named Bob Franklin, who was the director of the Noonday Baptist Association. Now, I don't come from a Southern Baptist background, so I didn't even know what a Baptist association was. But I remember sitting there sitting in the parking lot in Marietta, the Noonday Baptist Association, and I told my wife, I said, listen, I'm going to be really honest with this guy. She's like, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm going to tell him I'm not wearing a suit and tie. I'm not using this version of the Bible. We're not using a hymn book. We're going to reach unchurched people. Here's what the music's going to look like. You know, this is what we're going to do. And he's probably going to ask us to leave or go, hey, it's been nice to meet you. But she's like, that's cool. And quite honestly, I didn't want to be part of any denomination or network. I just wanted to plant a church. Sat down with Bob Franklin, and he started sharing with me about what Noonday did, and I didn't really understand it. And finally, he pulls out this giant map, which was about the size of this wooden board behind me. And he says, I want to show you something. You see, this whole map here represents our region, the region of the Noonday Baptist Association. And he said, I want to show you. So you see all these green pins on the map? And I said, yeah. And he said, those represent the churches that make up our association. And I think at the time, like 110. He said, you see the blue pins? And I said, yeah. And he goes, the blue pins represent the churches that we've started in the last 5 years. And he said, now, you're talking about planting in where? And I said, Paulding County. And he said, what intersection are you looking to plant in? Or like the region? And I said, well, I don't really know the area really well, but I know that there's a Chick-fil-A and a Walmart on the corner of Highway 92 and Highway 278. And he said, really? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, those organizations do their research, so obviously they know people are coming in. And I knew at the time that the county was the seventh fastest growing county in the country. It was 93.7% unchurched, and he verified all that. And he said, I want to show you something. He said, you see this? See these red dots? There's just a handful of red dots. He said, but you see this red dot the furthest over here on the west? And I said, yeah. He said, my staff and I put this red dot, this red pin, on the intersection of Highway 92 and 278 2 years ago. And almost every day, we gather as a staff and we pray that God will send someone to plant a church targeting that intersection. And it's a church that you just described to me, a church that's focused on reaching lost people. And he said, it's amazing. And here you are sitting here right in front of me. And my wife and I are going, okay, here we go. He's reeling, you know. And then he reached out and grabbed my arms and my wife's arms. And he pulled us across the table, literally pulled me across the table. And he said, I just want you to know that church planting is kingdom work. Now, my wife and I, when we decided to plant a church, we had a little saying that we wanted to be part of something that was so big that we would be foolish to ever take credit for it. We wanted to be part of what God was doing with his kingdom, not even really understanding what all that meant. And at that moment, I knew this is where God had called us to be. And I cannot tell you how many moments I've had like that along the way as we've become not just a church plant, but a sending church. And it's been an amazing ride. So I'm going to end with that story, and we're going to have an altar call, and I'm going to serve communion, an offer. I'm going to take an offering. So any questions along the way before we go? Yes?
Yeah. Why did you turn down food?
You know, quite honestly, obviously God, but it was probably a little too far away from my wife's family. So that is a great question. And quite honestly, that has been the shift that we've been making over the last few years, because almost all of the guys early on came from other places because we were doing things that other people weren't doing. And so, like a church planting school. So now what I tell our church is our best church planters are in our children's ministry right now. They're this high. Our best church planters are in our middle school. They don't even know that they're going to be church planters. But the more that we talk about this and the more it continues to become part of the DNA. And so we've seen people leave, like literally move and go to Baltimore, Orlando, Charleston, Utah, different places. And now we're praying that God would raise up out of our children's ministry, middle school ministry, our next greatest church planters. And that being at Westridge, they can't help but catch a vision for reaching the rest of the United States and the world. And they understand that church planting is really the best evangelistic tool that we have available to us. So we're talking about it all the time. I have just had a conversation a few weeks ago with a high schooler who sat down with me because he's got to write a paper on what he wants to do for his life for school. And he said, I believe God's called me to be a church planter. And I went, yes. So helping to kind of lead him a little bit, where to go to school and get him connected with the right stuff along the way. So, Yeah, so it's just been the constant, I guess, evolution of where we've been, you know, sending people out, now raising them up from within, you know. So we tell all of our kids this high, you're gonna be a church planter one day. No, we don't do that, but we do tell our people all the time in our membership class, listen, I just want you to know, you may not know this, but you might be moving to another city in about 5 years. Get ready for that. So, all right, any other questions?